So I was trying to decide if it is worse to watch a continuous loop of the Silent Hill movie or continue to play the new Silent Hill game. I can't decide which one's more torturous and representative of what they're trying to accomplish.
I don't know. The last Silent Hill I played, or I don't even think I played it. I think I watched Lindsay play it, actually. It was a PS2 game, I think. Right? Was it the PS2? Yeah. It was a PS2 game, and early on, you're in this building, and there's a type of, I don't know, are they monsters or what? Like little cult demon things?
I don't know how you
I don't know.
describe it. It
And
haunts your
what it
face.
does is it jumps on you and wraps its legs around you, around your chest. And as it's humping your chest, it's like vomiting on you.
Yep, that's pretty representative of
All
what they're doing.
right, that's the image of Silent Hill I have in my head, is a chest humping, vomiting monster.
That's kind of the feeling I get when I'm playing the games, actually, now, depressingly enough. Did you see the movie that they came out with Boromir and I forget who else was in it that it was any of consequence, but
No. But let me ask you this. Did Sean Bean die in that one?
he did not.
Okay. Good for
He,
him.
I know. I see everyone else did. He didn't. So I think that maybe that's why he decided to switch up his roles a little bit.
Yeah, they pulled a reverse Sean Bean in it then.
Yeah, exactly. You were waiting the whole time for him to get the axe, and he never did.
But
No,
no, I've never seen it.
The
it
movie?
was pretty bad.
Wait, you liked it? Lindsay turned to me and said, "The movie? Sick."
No, I said it's sick. Here's the thing,
First of all, seriously,
yeah,
sick.
yeah. I live in
I know we're in
California.
California, but
Yeah, I live in California.
sick?
No,
All right.
I'm a Californian. I can get away with it. No. The pyramid head part, like that, seriously, has to be one of the best scenes in a movie I've seen. And I don't know. I don't remember when the movie came out. I think it had to have been within the past decade. But I
Yes.
mean, literally. You're seeing everybody scrambling into the church. The bell is clanging. Pyramid Head comes up and just skins this person alive, like right there on the step. It's incredible. It was awesome.
There were some definite highlights. The problem was everything else with it. It was a weird movie in general, but this whole month has been like Mass Effect, and everyone seems to forget we had this glut of Silent Hill month because they were HD Collection, which had 2 and 3, and then Downpour came out. Resident Evil had what, two games came out, Revelations and Raccoon City this month. So
Yeah.
it's sort of the month for survival horror games, and so far they've all been god awful.
Have you played the HD collection then?
Yeah, I booted that up because I mean I played 2 and 3 years ago when they came out, and it's great. I mean I'll play through them and beat them before I write anything up, but they play how I remember, not too dated, and they look good, but it's still creepy and it still has this atmosphere, and there's something that it does with the music and with all the lighting and stuff, and even with the technical shortcomings of newer consoles, they did so much with some of those old Silent Hill games that I was still getting a little bit freaked out playing through the opening sequences of 2 and 3. Then I played Downpour, and it's bad. It's sort of like how Resident Evil 5, and I think that we've touched on that on podcasts a long time ago.
I believe so, yeah.
They kind of, this time, instead of trying to make it an action game, they try to make it an open world game. Like, they tried to make Silent Hill Elder Scrolls in a way, where
Interesting.
they give you this whole world to explore, and combat's atrocious. The map and everything is atrocious. The whole world is just sort of muddled and strange, and it seems like they had no idea what they were doing, but they saw a lot of really popular Western games, so they tried to ape the style without actually ever playing them.
See, I can't imagine a survival horror game being successful as an open world game. I think that really the point of the game, in my opinion, requires that it be somewhat pointed as far as your progression is concerned.
Right.
Because there has to be some sort of suspense, some sort of constant, consistent action or experience going on to keep that feeling going.
And that's kind of how I feel. Like, Dead Space was a great, great game. Even if you don't even look at the first Dead Space as a horror game, just as an action game, I think it was fantastic. I mean, really good pacing, very claustrophobic feeling without ever getting repetitive or cliched. There's always sort of that sort of Damocles feeling where you didn't know what was going to go bad for you around every corner. Fantastic game. And I don't understand how these people, the Japanese who gave us Resident Evil and gave us Silent Hill, they perfected the genre. They can't manage to get even a decent game for survival horror out whatsoever. I mean, two completely terrible Resident Evil games and a terrible Silent Hill game now. It's baffling and kind of depressing. Oh, yeah, and Raccoon City, they basically repackaged our childhood and tried to make it sort of like Resident Evil 2 without actually making it good. It controls a little bit like the old games, but not enough to be nostalgic. Just frustrating.
Yeah. I can't stand Resident Evil in general. And we've had that discussion as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it's, I mean, obviously, I like I said, the most survival horror thing I've really played and enjoyed. I initially said Ghostbusters before remembering that Left 4 Dead was actually very entertaining. And I don't know, it was partially the controls and partially just the atmosphere of it.
And then, you know, it's really tough for me to look back as a fan and find a way to defend or recommend some of these old series that I loved. And it's kind of painful. It's sort of, I've been in denial, like, hey, they'll get it right. It's just growing pains. Japan's going to start getting it right again. And it's getting harder and harder for me to believe my own bullshit on this. It's very upsetting.
I can understand being upset with that when it's a genre that you are a fan of. Doesn't bother me much that they're crapping out on horror games because I don't really play them. But
I think they crapped out on RPGs for sure. I mean, they haven't really put out an amazing game in a long time.
I'm not so sure about that. I mean, well, first off, welcome to episode 22 of Marooners Talk. We'll title this one, Oh, the Horror. And that's horror, as in horror genre, not horror as in, you know, someone's mom or something. I don't know.
So glad you did that, because I was ready to make that joke.
Well, you know, we're gamers, and we're all foul-mouthed, entitled assholes, so.
Very true.
Someone had to make the joke.
Very true.
But yeah, back to that. I mean, Binary Domain, I thought, for example, a recent example, I thought was a fantastic Japanese shooter, which is something that they generally, I think, had trouble with a couple of exceptions here and there, most obvious being Vanquish.
Yeah.
But Binary Domain and then Vanquish and Bayonetta as a fantastic Japanese action game, I think maybe they have just shifted focus into something that is more successful in the West.
I just don't think that they're really hitting on the successful part. I think Binary Domain was really interesting. I don't think it was like genre defining, but it was good. And I think Bayonetta and Vanquish were great. I really do think that those were incredible games.
Yeah.
But I have a really, really tough time backing anything else that they've put out for a pretty freaking long time. It's sad because I want to like these things and I want to really enjoy Japan, but I can't do it. I don't know what it is, but it's been rough for a while for me.
I am trying to think of things. It's slim pickings trying to think of something fantastic and successful in the West that's come out of the East lately.
Yeah, exactly.
that's exactly what it's like. I did. I loved Binary Domain, honestly, and then obviously Vanquish and Bayonetta are fantastic, and I'm looking forward to Anarchy Reigns. But aside from that, well, okay, no, Sumioni Demon Arts on the Vita, that was a lot of fun. At first, my initial impressions were not very favorable, but as I got into it more, I really began enjoying it. But yeah, I'm running dry now.
Yeah, that's pretty much how it goes.
Yeah, there was one that came out a few months ago. Remember?
No.
The Final Fantasy X2.
Yeah. What?
Or not X2, the 13-2.
Okay, we're talking about good.
No. Yes. I mean, I'm just saying, because you were saying successful.
Right, but successful as in not shit.
Oh, well, I don't know what to tell you.
Okay.
Yeah, no, you were talking about successful.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, I liked 13-2, but again, it's a good game, and it's really fun. I enjoyed it. I don't feel like it was a great game.
Right.
And that's what really bothers me is they just don't put out the great stuff anymore. I look to Western developers, and looking down the road for the rest of the games this year, I don't see anything Japanese-based that is really making me excited to pick up a game.
I can't either, honestly. I mean, rest of the year, I'm looking forward to it, I guess, solely American things.
Mm-hmm.
Counter-Strike, Tony Hawk, Ghost Recon, Borderlands 2. If they haven't pushed Brothers in Arms, then Brothers in Arms. What else is coming out this year?
You said Borderlands 2?
Yeah, I said Borderlands.
Assassin's Creed?
Yes, Assassin's
Say
Creed.
That.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff I'm looking forward to this year. But yeah, you're right. I can't think of anything really that's from a Japanese studio.
Yeah, so it's you know, and I think that it's been harped upon, but I really wonder if we're going to see a sort of segmentation of Japanese and Western video games. Like how many, we already see a lot of them that don't come over here, or a lot of games that get put over here localized on one system or one console to no fanfare. And I wonder how long that's going to keep going.
That's a good question. You're right. There's a lot that either doesn't make it over here or makes it over here quietly and with kind of a limited release. I think mostly that what does come over is for fanboy appeasement.
Yeah, and I don't even think that they always pick the right ones for that situation all the time.
No, yeah, I can agree with that.
Yeah, they. It's just such a strange situation because how does a company like Square Enix expect to keep making money when they really haven't put anything out that I feel is worthwhile or that successful?
Yeah, and then there are titles they put out that it's like, so you know, Square Enix is a Japanese development company, but I wouldn't consider Hitman necessarily a Japanese game.
No, not at all.
So they have Hitman, what is it, Absolution, the new entry? All right. Mm-hmm. They've got that coming out, but I wouldn't lump that in with maybe Final Fantasy or anything else as a Japanese title. It seems like it is, you know, meant for the Western audience and designed for that and marketed for that.
Exactly. But that's it was strange, and all the Square Enix stuff I've really enjoyed has been Western developed, you know, like Just Cause and stuff like that, which I loved.
Oh yeah,
or Just Cause 2. I'm sorry. I really hope they do another one of those games sometime. But
I never played the first, but I played maybe half a day in the second one, and I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I absolutely loved Just Cause 2. And it's one of those games I keep putting in. I never beat it, and I probably never will, but goddamn if it wasn't fun.
Well, yeah, there's so much to do in it, and it's so beautiful to just play in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. So, bringing it back to sort of what they're doing, the Japanese standard games are not ones like Just Cause, that's an open world game. They were known for RPGs, for survival horror, and for making genres. And now they're kind of known for laughingstocks. I don't see how another Silent Hill game can ever get made after this. I mean, honestly, it's a nightmare game. It was just, and not in a good way, not in the actual fun way it's supposed to be. It was really bad. And I cannot see how they could possibly make money putting off a new game, or if people would ever, you know, put up with it. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe it'll sell great, but
at some point, you just need to retire the franchise. Honestly, mm-hmm. that's what I mean, you may end up running a franchise for decades, but at some point, it's too much. At some point, you have to sit back and say, you know what? We've had a good run with Silent Hill, for example. Let's go ahead and end it and be done with it, and we'll start something new. But it ties into that mentality of sequels and franchises that is not just in games, but like in movies that have become so vital. You can't just put out a game or a movie anymore. You have to put it out with the opportunity to expand it into a franchise. Otherwise, it's not even worth doing anymore.
Which is kind of sad, in all honesty.
It's ridiculous.
I'm really... It's very depressing that they let this happen to the entire industry, that it's so predicated on sequels. It's like movies, where if you can't make 1,000 copies of it and put out toys and, you know, paper plates and whatever else, then they don't want to have anything to do with it. And it's criminal.
Yeah. It is part of that attitude, I think, that it is more now about the money, and their businesses. I can't really fault them for wanting to make money on everything, but do it with taste if you want to maintain your fan base and the goodwill of your fan base, at least.
Right.
If you have a good game that doesn't need a sequel to it, and you're going to not put it out because, well, there's not really any future potential for this IP, well, then you're pretty much fucking your fans.
Right.
Out of a good game.
So sad. I don't even know what else to say on it. It's just really upsetting to try to review games and know that now I can't trust my $60 to go someplace worthwhile. I'm just going to... I hate that feeling. I want to like every game, and so when I don't, it's really upsetting, especially something that... I think Resident Evil might be one of the reasons that I became such a huge gamer. I mean, that really... I spent more time than I care to admit playing the first couple games, and yeah, they've run it into the ground. So, it's sad.
Yeah. It really is.
Yeah. There's just not much else to say on that, but we are now looking at these classic genres becoming absolute garbage, and the games like Mass Effect that we've talked at great length about becoming the pinnacles of games as an artistic expression.
Yeah. That's a tough one. I'm still kind of on the fence about games as art, as a whole. I would not agree that all games are art. And I don't know too many people, I think, who would agree that every game is art, because, you know, not every film is art, not every book is art. But then, you know, I play something like Rayman Origins, and I look at just how beautifully done it is, and I think, okay, this I can say is art.
Yeah, I see Rayman is an excellent example. But that's almost a game where you could look at it as an artistic, as a piece of art, even without playing the game.
Mm-hmm.
that's what's really interesting. This is just such a beautiful concept and beautiful game, and that the artwork would is just incredible. But as a entire piece, is that one a work of art? Whereas, you know, Mass Effect, I think, is occasionally a pretty good game or looking game. Sometimes it looks garbage. But as a whole piece, story and characters and acting and what they accomplish, it is absolutely a masterpiece.
Okay. Yeah, I can see. Yeah, looking at it in two different ways, I can see both of those. Because, like with Rayman Origins, it's just so... The individual pieces are so well drawn. I mean, if you look at any still from the game, it's beautiful. But then that, you know, actually continues forward into the game itself. The motion is all beautiful. It just maintains that vision of beauty no matter what. So I guess is a superficial beauty, I suppose. Rayman Origins qualifies for me. But then, like you were saying, the depth and gravitas of the Mass Effect series and how well it was done and all of that would qualify it as a more content-driven art, I suppose.
Right, and that's the biggest question is how do you... What are the judging metrics? Like, what do you pick from in order to say a game is art or not? I mean, are we looking at just the artwork for it? Because obviously a ton of games have beautiful artwork and design. Or are we looking at it as an entire piece like we would a movie where the acting is involved and we're looking at the whole story itself and how many plot holes there are and how it develops over, you know, the course of 10 or 20 hours?
Right. And I think that's something that's not really going to get resolved because it's something that isn't fully resolved in other mediums anyway. You can look at something pretty in a gallery and there might not be a lot of sense to it or content to it, but it's art just because of the design and because of the implementation of however the painter decided to paint it, for example.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And then on the other hand, you can see a really poor quality film as far as, you know, the production quality and the actual filming itself, but the script, the acting, all of that becomes art itself as well because, you know, it has something unique. It has its own meaning.
Right. It's a weird argument because I think that most gamers want to say that, yes, games are absolutely art because it lends us a little bit more credence and respect, and it makes our hobby and habit look, I guess, better. But there, I can understand the arguments of a game being interactive in a way that, like, a movie or a painting or something else isn't.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's the only argument I can think of that holds a lot of water. But then you look at Mass Effect, and obviously people didn't have a lot of input on how that one ended. So,
yeah.
You know, it's a tough one.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Well, we could spend another hour on Mass Effect, but let's not.
Yeah. No. Absolutely.
Yeah. I don't know. There was something you were saying, and it's just completely slipped my mind now. What were you talking about just a minute ago?
The interactive portion of it? Or...
Hell. I can't remember now. You know what? Yeah, I don't care if people see gaming as art, honestly. I don't need the validation. And I think that's... Like, it's part of what's driving this games as art thing is that desire for validation of a hobby or of a career or of a passion. And while it would be nice in certain cases where it's appropriate to be designated as art, I don't require it at all to continue enjoying it as a passion and to continue... I mean, I'm not ashamed of it because it's not art. And it becoming art wouldn't help in that respect. I'm perfectly content with it as it is.
I feel pretty much the same way. I don't really... I don't need the validation personally. I think that I want games to be considered art for certain defenses, maybe, like, because sometimes I do feel a little bit defensive about my hobby, for sure. But really, I don't have to care. I don't really need to worry about it. And if someone doesn't think that games are art, I'm not going to fight them on it. I'm not going to waste my time caring what they say. And I can go on with my life. I really want the recognition more for the developers and the writers and the people who put their blood, sweat, and tears into the development. It'd be cool for them to get the nod and for them to get the acknowledgement.
Yeah, I can agree with that.
But, you know, for like you and I, we don't really have a stake in the game on that one. I mean, it doesn't affect us one way or the other. There are certain segments of the industry that it might affect, either for legal purposes or just to sort of validate their professions. But the everyday gamer, people should not care.
No. And when you really think about it, you get the argument that people who play video games a lot are either immature or they are wasting their time when they should be reading a book or, you know, working or doing something productive. Well, let's say I'm sitting and I'm reading a book. I'm reading favorite book of all time. I'm reading The Lord of the Rings or The Hobbit.
Mm-hmm.
How is that really any more productive or any more respectable than playing a game? I'm still immersing myself in fiction, in fantasy.
That's the point. It's your leisure time.
Yeah.
Do whatever the hell you want in your leisure time. That's the point. I mean, is playing BioShock for the fourth time for me any different or any less valid than my neighbor watching Jersey Shore?
Well,
I mean, I think it's probably more valid, honestly.
I would say more valid, but that's just because you chose Jersey Shore as the comparison.
But you know, that goes towards a lot of reality TV shows and things like that.
It does. It does. We started watching this show called, Shaws of Sunset?
Yep.
Oh, my God.
On Bravo, because I'm Persian, and I was kind of curious, and Lindsay's part Italian, so I always gave her crap about Jersey Shore, calling them her people. So this was kind of turnabout of seeing my people, but I'm okay with it because I'm going to laugh my ass off at all of them because they are the epitome of each stereotype.
But yeah, I think that I think games are a lot more engaging, important, relevant, and enlightening than most TV that's on nowadays.
Yeah, I would agree, because you're actually using your brain when you're playing a game. You're using not just, you know, hand-eye coordination, but you're using some sort of critical thinking in most games as far as for how you're going to proceed through a level. If there's anything where strategy is needed, or if you have to figure out puzzles. I mean, there's more activity going on in your head when you're playing a game than when you're just sitting back and watching something. Completely. And then that applying your mind to puzzles or strategy or anything in a game is, you know, doing more than sitting and reading a book also. As much as I love reading, and I think reading is fantastic, it's, you know, there is that argument to be made.
All right. It was one of those just strange, bizarre things that, you know, in probably 5 or 10 years, no one's going to pay attention to it because we're all going to be just so used to games and they're going to be so accepted.
Yeah.
You know, it will be, it ceases to be an issue. But for right now, it is interesting at our age, both being, you know, in that 30 range, 30-year-old range. It's, if you tell people you're playing video games over the weekend, it's really a crapshoot on how people are going to respond to that.
Yeah, it's. I still get the same responses from my parents that I've gotten for years and years and years. Generally, it's a sigh of exasperation whenever my dad calls, for example, or I call him and he asks what I was doing or what I'm up to. I'll say, I was playing this game and I was doing this, and he'll sigh and make some sort of comment about how I could be doing something else, or just make sure I don't waste too much of my money on it, that kind of thing. And then we'll move on to talking about clocks, because that's all he ever talks about. I'm not kidding. He's got, last count, a little over 300 clocks in his house.
That seems excessive.
Well, yeah. He buys them when they're broken, and he will repair them. The case, the movement, everything. Like, refinish them, and they work, and they look nice, and he has no room for anything else, because every surface in his house has a clock on it.
That's strange.
Yeah, he jokes with me that he'll never get rid of them, because he doesn't want to deprive me of the joy of going through every single piece of crap he has when he dies.
Oh, yeah. Parents are wonderful, aren't they? But I really get an odd reaction, too. Like, I'm almost kind of scared to admit to my dad how often I play games. I mean, aside from writing about them, I think that he would probably rather me spend money on something, quote-unquote, more worthwhile as well. But, you know, I don't pay for cable. I don't watch that much TV. Games are my hobby and my leisure time, and that's what I do when I'm not working or going to class.
Yeah. And how's that, I mean, and how's it any different from, my example, my dad spending all of his time fixing clocks and spending time and money on clocks? What's the difference? I'm doing something that's engaging my mind. He's doing something that's engaging his mind. And good for him, good for me. It's just a different opinion.
Yeah, I completely agree. So it's going to be different in a few years when we take the reins from everyone.
Yeah.
it's
we have to stop playing games long enough to take the reins, of course, so that kind of stands in our way, but...
Yeah, that could be right. Maybe that's their plan in general, is to put out all these games so we can't actually do anything or succeed.
Yeah. But then I think the other side of that is, for example, with Konami, I like their PR guys, but they haven't really been doing a lot of PR stuff lately. Blades of Time, for example, got two emails. One the week before it was released, announcing its existence, and then one 3 days after it was released, announcing that it was released. And that's it. I mean, to be fair, it was supposed to be released up against Mass Effect 3, so really, how much can you do other than, I don't know, change the release date, maybe, and advertise it, but...
True.
So on that other hand, they're putting out games, but they're not really telling us about all of them, so maybe they're trying to keep a bit of a balance there.
I don't know. I think that's just being lax. And you probably saw today the announcement of, I think it's Game and Game Station over in the UK, basically going belly up
this morning. Yeah, I had heard, I think last week, that they were going into administration, that Game was going into administration, their version of bankruptcy, soon. And I hadn't heard that happened today, though.
I think it was, I forget, one of the writers for MVC over there in England was tweeting about it. And it's really strange to see how much trouble some of these companies are in. And when you stop seeing PR releases and you stop seeing some of these games being talked about or pushed or really getting any kind of mention, it kind of worries me about what's going to happen to some of the companies in general.
Yeah. There's been a little bit of talk, I don't remember who was saying it, but that there were a lot of people kind of clamoring for a new crash of the industry, just because of some of the developers' actions and publisher actions. And I was shocked to see that, because it's like, yeah, EA may be not the best, and Konami may not really be on top of everything, and Capcom might just be straight up dicks, and there's a lot of stuff that, yeah, they're not really operating the way, I don't know, a conscientious company should operate that has such a vocal and interactive fan base. But I still want my games. I don't want to crash. I want games. I don't want to stop playing them. I don't want them to stop coming out. Why would you wish for that on your like on your own passion?
Yeah, I don't want to see a crash per se. I want to see a possible restructuring or reconsideration of how they do things now.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of things that could be changed. And we've talked about, you know, Capcom is one of the most ridiculous companies ever, how they put out games and, you know, we'll give you half of a game now and the other half later. And we'll
I mean, if you look up consumer unfriendly somewhere, I'm sure somewhere Capcom is listed as the first definition.
Yeah, definitely. So I would like to see them kind of get kicked in the paws a little bit and maybe sort of, I don't know, have them be restructured to the point where they need to start developing a little bit more fairly and a little bit more intellectually.
Yeah.
I'd love
to see someone held up as an example. Like, have consumers just completely ignore Capcom for months just so the rest of the industry can see, if we act like assholes, maybe we're not going to get business anymore. Maybe we should rethink that.
And maybe find ways to change how much development costs. I know that that's a huge problem, is the quote-unquote high cost of game development.
Yeah.
There needs to be a way for them to knock it down to the point that it doesn't hurt games in general and releases.
I question the cost of game development. I know it's significant, but you get fantastic games on modest budgets that have fantastic looks to them. I mean, The Witcher 2, for example, had a relatively modest budget, and it was hailed as, one of the most beautiful games, one of the most beautiful RPGs of the year.
Yeah, it...
So how can, one company, granted they're in Poland, maybe it was just a matter of the cost of living being lower there and them being able to pay less. I have no idea what the factors were, but on a more modest budget, they put out a fantastic game. On the other hand, you have some of the American studios who just dump money into a title and get maybe the same result, maybe worse results, maybe better results. Who knows?
It's strange to think about it, because how much of that money is press and how much of it is putting on those extravagant E3 shows that they do. I really wonder how much of it is actually going to pay for the game and structuring the game itself, and how much of it is going towards, I think we were mentioning last week, sending journalists to wild exotic locations to preview games.
Yeah.
That can't be cheap. The EA shows, like, look at the extravagance of EA when friggin' Activision had Cirque du Soleil to show off Kinect. Really, you couldn't have just put that into a game or just not spent the money?
Well, yeah, that's the thing. Game development costs, the actual cost of development, and a reasonable amount of press. I can be okay with that being part of the cost of a game and manufacturing and all that kind of stuff. The excess, that shouldn't be a driving factor behind the end cost of a game.
Right.
If, you know, game company A wants to fly a bunch of journalists out to an exotic island for Dead Island, okay, that's great. But that doesn't need to get passed on as part of the purchase price to a consumer. That just needs to be something that they're going to shell out from their own pockets in order to essentially gamble on it producing more press to get more customers. It's a matter of You're trying to get volume when you do that kind of thing. You're not trying to increase the price of the product.
And it's sort of like the music industry where they take in the price of pressing the CD, making the booklet, promoting the artist, sending them all over the place. So, you know, artists don't get money off of the cost of or when people buy CDs, when they used to buy CDs. Right. And it seems like they really have the game industry set up in a way that basically screws everyone else. That pretty much lines the pockets of publishers, makes sure that they push developers to work ridiculous amounts of hours, unfair developments. We hear complaints all the time, putting in way more effort than they get paid, and then they manage to reap the benefits and throw the excess everywhere else.
Yeah.
You know what? Don't have the excess. Like, we shouldn't. They should be able to put out emails to people for almost no cost saying, hey, this game is coming out. Let's talk about it. Everyone is pretty concentrated in California or have one trade show a year instead of the six or seven that they have. Have that be your press. You don't, you know, the entanglements that they get and the concentration on spectacle, I think, really hurts game development and hurts the pricing.
Yeah, and you know what? Instead of, you know, make it, yeah, one trade show, maybe two, one in the early part of the year, one in the late part of the year. So if you have different development time schedules, you can at least get in at some point in the year.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of spending all of that money on, like you're saying, spectacle within the event, and instead of flying journalists out to where the hell ever, fly a bunch of journalists in for the trade show. Put that money into expanding, you know, the number of journalists you're going to be hitting, thereby expanding the coverage and expanding the number of customers you might get for your product. Instead of spending it all in other ways, do it in something that's practical and direct and treat it seriously.
Yeah, give us there needs to be a massive restructuring. I mean, before we start getting caught up in arguing, is this game art? Is this game not art?
Right.
Et cetera, et cetera. Why don't we try to fix the industry so it actually represents interesting developments and becomes an actually, you know, worthwhile industry for people to look at and say, hey, this stuff is artistic. Hey, these guys are doing great new things. Right now it's just a cash cow and they're sucking the teat dry.
Yeah. Well, and it's tough to support aspects of the industry. ESA, for example.
Mm.
Heavy supporter of SOPA last year. Was it last year already? Yeah, it was last year. And is ESA right, or is it the ECA? What the hell was it? It was ESA.
I don't know. I'm not supposed to participate.
Smartass.
S.
Yeah, ESA. Heavy supporters of SOPA, and so regardless of what a lot of their constituent game companies were saying, this organization supposedly representing the industry took very little of the industry's opinion in their representation. It was, no, mm-hmm. We're supporting SOPA. Then you had Epic, and you had a handful of others saying, no, we don't support SOPA. But then you do have the other ones that were supporting it, and it's unfortunate. And I'm going to get way off track here, and I might as well just wrap it up. But it's unfortunate that we are passionate about an industry that really has problems with its consumers.
Yeah, that's really kind of the depressing long and short of it.
Yeah. And that ties into what we were talking about last week with journalists hating their readers and the game companies hating their consumers. It's just, you expect comments and page views and good discussion from your readers, but you treat them like they are shit. You expect money and support and word of mouth from your customers, but then you turn around and you sell them half a game and then make them pay for the rest of the game. I don't understand how any of that is acceptable.
Well, it really shouldn't be. Forbes had an awesome article today, or it was at least being tweeted about today by a bunch of people on, you know, various games press, and it was talking about how entangled the industry is to the journalistic side of it is to the PR side of it, and how it really means that the entire industry is untrustworthy, ridiculous, and we can't trust them whatsoever. It's, I can see where people are getting huffy and upset about it, but it is a really interesting deconstruction, really taking reviews of Mass Effect and Gears of War 3 and things like that, and trashing reviewers. And it was,
I think that came out last week, because I remember having a discussion essentially about how, yeah, reviewers are supposed to, the whole point of writing a review, really, honestly, when you look at almost any review on the internet, is to educate consumers. Mm-hmm. It may be born out of passion, but what you're doing is educating consumers and affecting their purchasing decisions. Right. That's where your responsibility lies.
Yeah, he put out part two today, which is where I saw it.
Oh,
what I thought was interesting was the reaction from the journalists that I follow, and just how ridiculously offended they were. But, you know, they really do miss the point. I think one of the parts of the article was, you know, the games journalism industry, it's so insular, and the people that have been in it, most of them have been in it since it was a little fledgling industry. And they forget what it's like to be a fan, and they forget what it's like to do a service for the reader and to service their audience. And I thought that was an excellent point. And that's what people were offended about, but, you know, goddamn if he wasn't correct.
Yeah. Now that got me riled up. I was very upset last week over a lot of different things, and in rare form, I let a lot of that out on Twitter. And it's just, it hasn't gone away. All the issues are still there. It's just, I've said what I want to say about it. But really, seeing a lot of these journalists get upset about what Forbes is doing, or what that one guy, I guess, or one or two guys who are writing games stuff on Forbes are doing, is honestly, I think, insecurity. You have someone coming in on Forbes, of all places, and doing games journalism and writing things that are actually valid and make sense that they don't want to hear or they don't want to see, and they're threatened by it, and they're upset because it's threatening to, I don't know, knock them off of the joyride they've been on.
Yeah, and it's really true, because you see the same, you know, 15 writers that publish everything on every site and jump between stuff.
Yeah.
And they always talk a big game. They want to change the industry, and they want to try to do things differently, and they never do.
No, they follow the industry. They toe the line that they are supposed to toe.
I mean, look at the Vox game thing. I haven't seen them do anything unusual, different, or unique so far. It's been the same stuff that they all did at their other publications.
Yeah. But so that's the thing. You can't really, there's not a lot that you can do that's new without rocking the boat. And none of them are going to rock the boat. It's their, I mean, and to be fair, it's their livelihood. There's only so much boat rocking you're going to do when it could potentially affect paying your mortgage and your car and caring for your family. I can understand that. But then don't make a big to-do about wanting to change things if you know you're not going to, because that's how you earn your living. It's a matter, I guess, of being genuine about your intentions.
But that's the entire thing that's wrong with the industry. They shouldn't have to fear. You shouldn't have to worry about paying your mortgage because you decided to speak out or do something different.
I agree. I absolutely agree.
That is ridiculous. It is terrifying and not even, like, it's, that is exactly what's wrong. That's what we need to see change.
No, it is. The power, for some reason, rests in the hands of publishers and developers. Mm-hmm. And there's no reason that it should.
Yeah.
They honestly are dependent on journalists. Not entirely, of course, but they have a very strong dependence on journalists to get word out there, to get impressions and opinions and reviews out there to a very generally technology savvy audience that is, you know, most of their customer base. It's not the other way around. The only thing that journalists depend on the industry for is maybe like early access to anything and free copies of stuff. That's it.
Right.
Otherwise, just hell, you know what? Go buy a game and review it.
We could, and that's kind of what's scary is if enough journalists flexed their muscles,
mm-hmm.
Things would change real quick.
They would. Absolutely. But it's getting them to do that.
And I just don't understand why it's so hard. Like, I think that if enough people did it, people wouldn't really be that worried. I think that you could get a lot of people to jump on board. And why the hell hasn't that been organized yet? Why haven't they just said, you know what? Screw you guys. We're going to not allow you to dictate things like NDAs. And we're not going to accept these extravagant trips or gifts that you send us. Just don't do it.
I think because a lot of them in the top tier of what we do have gotten used to that kind of luxury,
mm-hmm.
Have gotten used to the way things are and don't want to risk changing it. And no matter, you know, every single community site can, you know, rally together and say, you know what, no, we're not doing this anymore. This is the way it's going to be from now on. And hell, some of the bigger sites could join into that too. But as long as IGN and Kotaku and Verge and whoever, Vox Gaming or whatever it is, really remain true to the system as it is now, no one's going to care. Because honestly, the amount of coverage a developer or publisher gets from, I guess maybe like all of the community and enthusiast sites can easily be made up just by IGN, Kotaku, and Vox.
Yeah.
And Joystick, although I have a higher level of respect for Joystick than Kotaku and IGN, but I can't say that they wouldn't fall in line also.
I'm a little bit worried about Joystick, though. I don't know if you saw AOL stuff today.
No.
The AOL is starting to hemorrhage money and they're trying to sell off all of their patents right now. So I don't know how that affects their web industry and such, but it makes me a little bit concerned that Joystick could be tossed over to somebody else or get absorbed by somebody.
Yeah, it's a valid concern.
Yeah. You know, the articles I read didn't say anything, but you know, we might see a shakeup of the journalism industry just because people like Gawker and AOL might lose Kotaku and Joystick and somebody else is going to have to fill the void.
I wouldn't mind if the whole Gawker group just stopped.
Oh, absolutely not.
Just stopped. That's it. Just stop.
Yeah. Yeah. God, yeah. We someday we need to do our Kotaku rant podcast.
Yeah, that... I'm going to start researching it, pulling up the pieces that really exemplify Kotaku so that we can have them all ready for when we are ready to do that rant, because I'll enjoy that one.
Well, today their headline, I don't know if you saw it, was their review of McDonald's Fish McBites.
Seriously?
I'm not even joking. I'm looking at it right now.
Opening up Chrome.
Yeah. Yeah, that's... That's the headline on Kotaku.
Let's see here. I'm on my 8 or 9 year old laptop right now, so it takes a little while to do anything. Okay.
And I love how if you did to look at their stories, if you click more stories, one of them always gets cut off. That's awesome. Yeah.
It's up here right now, and the top story on the front face of Kotaku, McDonald's Fish McBites, the Snack Taku review.
Yep.
You want to talk about a site that has lost its way? Kotaku has to be at the top of that discussion.
I think that that's a little outside of their purview, personally. I mean, yeah. Even if it's joke or it's for April Fools or something funny, I understand that people like to mix it up, quote unquote. But dear God, man, like, self-respect goes a long way.
Yeah, that's ridiculous. Well, I guess on that note, I can say that we're not going to feature any kind of Fish McBite review on our site anytime soon. So if that is the kind of content you're looking for, Kotaku's your go-to site. Otherwise, for anything gaming related, maybe check out maroonersrock.com, where you can find this podcast, Marooners Talk, or facebook.com/maroonersrock, or on Twitter, at @marooners_rock. You got anything else today?
I was going to go out to Taco Bell and try the new Chalupa and do a review of it, but apparently I'll have to send it into Kotaku and see if they'll publish it.
Yeah, sorry about that. I don't really like limiting you guys as far as what you can produce, and I don't want to impugn on your artistic integrity and creativity, but yeah, you might want to find another outlet for that.
I understand. No offense taken.
Cool.
So, all right.
I'll have a good week.
I'll talk to you later. All right.